You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
Welcome to Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. This is me, Robin Kerner, the original Blue Republican. And today I'm going to introduce you to a young man, and young is an operative word here, who I met speaking when I was speaking at the NorCal Liberty Summit last year. And the reason I have him on the show is that, well, first of all, he's the kind of candidate for office that most of my listeners like. He's running for the 9th State Assembly District in California, and as we all know, there's a lot of interesting and sometimes maddening politics going on in California. So first off, Manuel Martin, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, you told me how young you were. How young are you?
I'm 26 years old, but the way I like to see it is you're never too young to start defending freedom.
I like the sound of that. Now, what on earth caused you to want to defend it in the way that you are trying to defend it, running for office?
Well, I think there are multiple ways you can get involved and defend freedom. If you have a lot of money, you can fund candidates that are ideologically aligned with you. You can, spend some time working for a candidate. You can be a blogger. You can host a radio show. Or you can go and seek the levers of government yourself and run for office. And, I feel that's the best way I can contribute towards promoting freedom is running for office and spreading the message of liberty. You know, Ron Paul was able to do what he did because he spoke truth to power from a position of power.
Right.
I think we need to get more truth speakers and seekers in positions of power.
I love the sound of that. Now, you are running as a Republican.
Yes,
you have the RLC endorsement. That's the Republican Liberty Caucus, right?
Yes.
And that would be the RLC of California?
Yes.
Okay. And you also have the endorsement of Tim Donnelly, a, let's say, conservative Liberty Republican who's running for governor.
Yeah, Tim Donnelly is the conservative option on the Republican ticket running for governor in California. He sponsored the Nullify the NDAA Act in California.
Right.
He wrote the bill, and Governor Brown signed it. So what we like to say in California is Governor Brown signed into law 804 useless bills last year, and it would be 805 except for Tim Donnelly's Nullify the NDAA Act.
I tell you what, now would you say, I saw that, and I was very, I mean, I was delighted that that was signed and that Tim was largely responsible for it. Give us some context for this, because, you know, I'm up here, I'm still on the left coast, you know, I'm up here in Seattle, but even I kind of look down in California and roll my eyes, and I mean, I used to live there, I was there for a couple of years, and
yeah.
I just couldn't go back, because it just seems like the state is falling off the left of the country sometimes, right? You know, they got their 13.3% state income tax, and I mean, just the whole, so many things, I don't even want to list them. But what's your sense living in California? What is the state generally, in a broad sense, of Californian politics right now?
Well, I think the state honestly mirrors where the country is at. And I think where the country is at, I think the country is yearning for someone to stand up and tell them the truth. And I think that's what California is yearning for. You know, we do have the highest sales tax, the highest income tax, highest gas tax, by the way. The state senator pro tem, Daryl Steinberg, is trying to raise our gasoline tax another 40 cents a gallon. So when you have a certain political party that is just doing things that is actively going to destroy the economy and take more money out of hardworking people's pockets, I think that people are starting to wake up and they're starting to realize that, look, the trajectory we're going down is not going to be prosperous for this state. And I think the challenge is getting people elected who truly want to do something beneficial for the people and not just go to Sacramento to beat the Democrats. Beating the Democrats will resolve nothing if you get an R who acts like a Democrat. We need to promote some pro-liberty ideas and defend maximum property rights.
Now, Manuel, I mean, obviously I hear that, but when you talk about the people who are kind of waking up, who are having enough of this, I mean, obviously the reason that California has kind of been driven to the state is because so many of the people of California have voted for this, you know, by American standards, in many ways, quite extreme left democratic lockdown, right,
yeah.
of politics in California. So these awakening people, are we talking a tiny minority, a small minority, a significant minority, or a large one?
I think what we're talking about is a very large, soon-to-be majority within the Republican Party. The Democrat Party, I don't think they are waking up to the root causes that's making California, you know, slip into obscurity. But that's okay, because once we get real conservatives elected to office who truly want to, you know, make sure government promotes and defends freedom, and they get on that stage, and you have Governor Brown debating Tim Donnelly, that's when you're going to see people start to wake up, when they actually hear an alternative to what they've heard their entire lives.
But what proportion of voters now would constitute the Republican Party base?
Well, it's about what proportion of voters in the Republican base that are waking up?
No, what proportion of Californians would likely turn out to vote Republican?
Well, you know, you're asking me to dictate what's going to happen in the future and 38 million people's individual decisions. I can't do that. But all I can say is that, you know, I've traveled with Tim Donnelly, and he gets a very, very honest, loving, receptive audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, he's speaking to Republican crowds, yes. But at the same time, he's speaking to people like me. Look, I'm running as a Republican. But the only reason I'm running as a Republican is because the people on the ground floor, the walkers in the district that are Republican, believe in freedom. And they're just looking for that leader to lead them. And I think once we give people a real option, then we're going to start seeing some change.
So do you feel then or do you see that in California, the Democrats are losing voters to maybe unaffiliated or independent because they are waking up, because they're, you know, willing to try on different political philosophies?
Yeah, in California, the fastest growing political registration is decline to state.
Okay.
Both parties have been losing ground. In the last 10 years, the Republican registration has slipped by 2%, and the Democrats have slipped by 1%. And decline to states are catching ground on both parties. The people in California, like I said, they're fed up with the system. The only thing is we have to present to them real diverse options on how we're going to run this government and defend their property rights and get the economy humming again.
And is it fair to say that to, as it were, you know, grow pro-liberty sensibility among the Californian electorate, people like you have to target those decline to states, that we need to be able to define what declining to state means, that we have to make that a pro-liberty, pro-constitution majority within that group?
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, it would be difficult to say, okay, decline to states, what do they believe in?
Sure.
Because I think if you're declined to state, you're a rather independent person and you don't, you know, subscribe mm-hmm. to any certain ideology. But the one thing to remember is the libertarian-type philosophy is rooted in common sense. And it's rooted in the American ideal of freedom. And so we need to go out and preach that message. And I think it will resonate with these declined states.
So are you having fun doing this?
You know, I am. I'm meeting a lot of good people. Mm-hmm. And I'm meeting, you know, people continuously shock me. The amount of effort that people put into my campaign,
yeah.
The amount of money that people contribute, it just honestly is very humbling. And it's a very good experience.
Good for you. I mean, I know, you know, I'm actually relatively new to the liberty movement, you know, in any serious sense. And, you know, for me, it started when I wrote an article 2.5 years ago or so. And it was amazing. The people who came forward, the love and the passion and just this fervor that will be joined to your efforts if people who love liberty see that by joining themselves to what you're doing, they can really make a difference. And obviously you're seeing that too, and you're right. It is so humbling and it's so exciting.
Yes, it is.
So Now, we've just got about a minute left in this segment. Just before we set this interview up, you sent me a list on Facebook of some things that I would be really interested to talk about. You mentioned the difference between sizes of districts among the states. How some states have a 2-year budget and some have a 1-year budget, et cetera, et cetera. So what I want to do later in the show is maybe explore some of these things and some of your thoughts about them, because they obviously have broader implications than just for California. Now, let's see. Do you have a thought on that just before we close the segment?
Yeah, you know, I think not only the people that we elect to office, I don't think that's as important as the type of structure that we put them into.
Right.
You know, the Constitution was designed to constrain our representatives so they work for us. And I think we need to be innovative in how we structure our state governments to make sure our representatives are truly acting in the benefit of the people of their respective states.
Absolutely. Hold on, Manuel. We're going to break. We'll be back soon.
All right.
Thank you. Welcome back to the second segment of this episode of Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious, and I am talking to Manuel, who is running for the 9th State Assembly District of California. And before we went to the break, Manuel just touched on something that I don't think we in the Liberty Movement talk nearly enough about. He made the point that it's not even so much the people that we elect that is going to determine the trajectory of our nation, although obviously that's critically important. It's the structure, the governing structure in which we put them. Is that right, Manuel?
Absolutely.
So then I just want to kind of give you the floor basically in this segment to talk about this, because obviously you've thought about it a lot. What do you think, if we could check, tell us what's right, if there is anything right, about our current governing structure, but also how it has diverged from what it was from what was intended when this nation was founded.
Okay, so I could go into the nation, but I want to stick and talk about California.
Right, now that's good. Let's do this on the state level, yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there really needs to be some changes implemented in this state and the nation as well. And it goes down to this basic principle. If we as human beings, with all of our defaults, rely on us sending virtualistic, moral people to government to do what's right, then that is a very bad form of government. We need to enact restraint on our representatives that force them to do the right things for the constituents. And so there are a lot of different avenues you can go down to force government to work for the people. And so on my website, manualforassembly.com, I have what I call my full-time representation plan, and there's a lot of different planks to make the government work for you. So I want to go over a couple of those, and I believe we have adequate time.
Sure. We've got, like, this is a 10-minute segment, so go for it.
Okay, so perfect. So let's start from the beginning. In 1879, California set up its bicameral legislature with 80 assembly members and 40 senators. Well, in 1879, each state assembly member represented 11,000 people. You know, fast forward 130-plus years, now each state assembly member represents 465,000 people. And I will posit that there is a direct correlation between how free you are and how close you are to your elected representative and how influential you can be. See, in California, because we have these gigantic districts that are 9 times the national average, the national average is 51,000 constituents per assembly member, and we're at 465,000. So as a result of these very large districts, you have politicians who feel as though they're a celebrity, because they are. They're one out of 80 in a state of 38 million.
Mm.
They have way too much power. They represent 465,000 people. That's kind of a kingly position. And they also have the unlimited ability to pass as many laws as they want every single year, because we pass one-year budgets in this state. So I have a couple of simple ideas. One, I want to shrink the size of the districts in California from 465,000, and I want to cut it in half to 232,000. Now, even when we take this drastic step to double the representation of the people in this state, we still have the largest districts in the nation. So California has a lot of work to do, but I think this is the first step. So I want to cut the district's size in half. Now, what this is going to do is it's going to make it much more affordable to run for office, because now you don't have to reach out to as many constituents. And also...
Oh, that's a good point. So what you're saying there is that these huge districts are obviously, I mean, it is obvious, but it's worth stating explicitly, it's a huge barrier to entry.
Well, it is incredibly obvious, but it's something that nobody thinks about.
Absolutely.
And elected politicians, they don't want to talk about it. Because if you're going to shrink the size of the districts, then that means you're going to have to elect more representatives. So under my plan, instead of there being 80 assembly members, there's going to be 160. So that means we're going to cut their celebrity in half. We're going to cut their power in half. We're going to make their districts smaller, which means it's going to be easier for a disenfranchised political minority to work hard to get rid of their incumbent.
Right.
In a small district, it won't, you know, for example, in New Hampshire, they represent, each assembly member represents 3,300 people. Well, if you want to run for assembly there, all you need is you and a buddy, and you can walk the entire district in a month and get your message out. But in California, where each assembly member represents almost 500,000 people, you can't really walk that district. There is no personal interaction between the people and their elected representatives. We have, and I hate to say it, but in reality, we have an oligarchy in this state. An oligarchy being defined of government by the few, for the few, you know, off the backs of the many. You have a small group of people that make all the laws and rules and regulations for the vast majority of people. So when you have 80 assembly members that represent 38 million people, I would say that is not a body, that is not a citizen legislature. And you talked about barriers to entry. So on average, each winning state assembly candidate spends $712,000 to win. So if the state assembly is supposed to be the basic form of state government, that is supposed to be the people's house. How is it the people's house when it costs $700,000 just to enter, just to be competitive?
That's a great point. It's so important. Yeah, it's such an important point. I'm really glad that you're discussing this.
Yeah.
Because this is the meta stuff that keeps the people out of the people's government, effectively.
Absolutely. And this is something that is not pro-Republican or pro-Democrat. This is something that I think will reach out to those decline-to-state voters.
Absolutely.
Those decline-to-state voters who realize that there is something integrally wrong with the way this government is functioning. So as I mentioned, it costs $712,000 to run a successful assembly race. Well, you know, that's really a basic number. There's an assembly seat in the Sacramento area in the last election where the Democrats spent $8 million to win. And the Republicans spent $4 million to lose. So all in all, this seat spent $12 million. That's crazy. That is not a citizen form of government. That is a game of, you know, who's got the most money and the most political influences.
You know, let's just join those dots, because a lot of people, you know, are disgusted by the money in American politics, and they have good reason to be. But,
yeah.
You know, but the point that you're making here is that, you know, we could even maybe, I guess, pass legislation or whatever to try and keep some of this money out of politics. But if you have a political structure, if you have a political system the pay to play the game is so big, then you're making the money in politics almost a necessary problem, right?
Well, so I would say that there's no way you could ever pass legislation to get money out of politics. When you have a district of 465,000 people, you can pass as much legislation
right.
as you want, but it's going to come down to those who are very wealthy, who have very wealthy friends, and who have a lot of connections in these big, gigantic districts, because you can't walk it. You can't make it personal. You cannot go out there and interact with all of, with the voting constituents. So the only way to get money out of politics, and I think really getting the money out of politics is a side benefit of decreasing the size of the districts.
Right. Okay.
The only way to get money out is to shrink the size of the districts and to increase the representation of the people. And I want to, you know, draw some contrast here. In North Dakota, in the 2012 election cycle, the state assembly candidate that raised the most amount of money, now they represent about 10,000 people per assembly member. The state assembly candidate that raised the most amount of money only raised $16,000.
Right.
And that candidate lost because in North Dakota, where each assembly member represents just over 10,000 people, it's not about party registration. It's not about radio ads. It's not about TV ads. It's not about mailer hit pieces. It's a small district. It's about personal interaction. It's about what is Joe Smith going to do to help the people and help this state. When you have these large districts, nobody knows their candidates. Nobody knows their elected representatives. So it comes down to two things: lots of money and party registration.
Right. I mean, people have to vote their ideology. They vote the letter after the name because they don't really have anything else to go on if they can't meet the guy. I mean, it's
They have no choice. They have no choice, and that's sad. And that's not the way our state government was designed. Remember, we started with 11,000
Just hold on right there, Manuel. We're going into the next break, but we can carry this on when we come back.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. In the break, I was talking to my guest, Manuel Martin, and we were having an interesting chat. And Manuel, I want my guest to benefit from the ideas that you were sharing with me in the last 5 minutes there when we were at the break. So I just want to hand this back to you and say carry on.
Okay, thank you, Robin. So we're going to – I just want to hit a brief overview of what we talked about before the break, and that, you know, we need to have a system and a structure of government that forces our elected representatives – to work for us. So one of those planks is we need to reduce the size of the districts in California from 9 times the national average of 465,000 constituents, and I want to cut it in half, and this is part of my full-time representation plan. So I want to look at my plan as a whole for the listeners. One, I want to cut the size of the districts in half to 200,000. I also want the state of California to start passing a two-year budget. Now, a two-year budget is integral for California. Right now, we have a one-year budget. That means our businesses need to look at and see what California, what kind of crazy laws are coming out of the legislature every single year. They have to worry about what the taxes are going to be like every single year, what the regulatory environment is going to be like every single year. So I think giving them a two-year budget will provide a lot of stability that the economy needs. So reduce the size of districts, pass a two-year budget, and then I also want to limit the amount of laws each state assembly and senator can propose to 5 each. So right now, under current limitations, each California state assembly member can propose 50 laws every single year, and each senator can propose 65 laws every single year. If you take that as a whole, that's 6,600 laws that can be proposed every single year. Now, does the government need to pass 6,000 laws a year to defend your freedom and your property rights? I think not. And that's also incredibly destructive for the economy, for our businesses to be sitting here, you know, on a knife's edge wondering what is our government going to do. So my full-time representation plan is designed to make the government work for you. So when you have these smaller districts, which makes it a lot easier for somebody to primary an incumbent that they do not like, because not only is the district more walkable, and not only is it more personable, but it takes less money to run.
And by the way, just let me interrupt you for a second, Manuel, if you don't mind. I actually discussed that in an extensive interview on a show just two or three shows ago with a gentleman called Chad Peace. So if any of my listeners are listening to you and want to understand it better, they can pull from the archive for my show, my interview with Chad Peace, where he actually gives the example of a race in California where a Democrat, an unknown and unfunded Democrat, actually did walk his district and was able to out-primary the party selected Democrat, and which he was kind of effectively making the best out of the system that is down there in California, where you have this the top two, where you have the you know, the non-party primaries going into a top two final ballot. But I just want to kind of alert my listeners to that, and then hand it back to you.
Yeah, so in California we do have a top two primary, and we can touch on that in a second. But you know, the full-time representation plan, when it's a smaller district to hold our representatives more accountable, they have to pass a two-year budget, and they can only propose five laws. So, you know, the question that I ask you guys, if you were elected, and you were an elected assembly member, and you knew that it was a lot easier for you to be primaried because it wasn't going to cost so much money, and you have to pass a two-year budget, and you only have five laws to propose every 2 years, are you going to meet with a lobbyist? Are you going to meet with a government agency? Or are you going to meet with your constituents and see what they need and see how you can truly help them to make sure you get reelected? Because it all comes down to that. That's pretty much all politicians care about, is getting reelected.
Now, Manuel, this all hangs together. And I understand that your proposal to halve the size of the districts in terms of population is, as you said, a first step in the right direction. But the districts will still be too big.
Oh, they will be still incredibly too big.
So is this really going to work?
I think it will work. Yeah, and the reason I think it will work is because, look, if you have a district of 230,000 people, then that means you probably have maybe about 140,000 people or 130,000 people that are actually registered to vote. And you only need to get 51% of that electorate. Well, technically not, because not everybody votes that's registered to vote. So by decreasing the size of the district, you're going to make it easier for people to walk, or for candidates to walk the district and truly get their message out.
I guess what I'm asking, Manuel, is at that size, is it small enough that it is worth walking the district at that size?
Now, see, I understand where you're coming from, and there is a little bit of danger of this, of, you know, going out and preaching the gospel of we need to reduce the size of the district and this is going to make the biggest difference in the world, when in reality the district would still be too large. But I do think that if you were to propose a plan in California and say, okay, we're going to go from 465,000 constituents to 50,000 constituents, all the people are going to look at is, oh my God, now we're going to have 1,200 state assembly members.
I see the problem. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a huge step.
Incremental. But even then, when we're cutting it in half, that's really not incremental. That's a huge leap. It's just that California's districts are incredibly large. They're almost as big as, you know, a congressional district. In Congress, there's an issue there too. Mm-hmm. So basically, the premise of the plan is make your representatives work for you. They have smaller districts. They have to pass a two-year budget, which cuts away at their power, because now they're only relevant as a lawmaker once every 2 years instead of every single year. And then when they have fewer laws, now they have fewer laws, but they're in a smaller district, you have to ask yourself, are they going to meet with a lobbyist or are they going to meet with the constituents? And I think all of these, when they're encompassed, are going to, you know, take gigantic leaps in as far as getting the people of California represented.
Right. Now, we did touch on the top two primary that has been instituted down there in California, and we've got it up here in my state of Washington. Talk a bit about what it means to be competing in that system.
Okay, so in general, I'm a little bit mixed on the top two system,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, what it does is it really encourages more moderate candidates as far as on the Republican side. Because now we can't get the Republicans and put them in the box in their own little primary and make sure we get the Liberty candidate. Now, but at the same time, it does present a huge opportunity for well-funded third-party candidates, because now no longer do they need to compete against a Republican and a Democrat in the general election. All they have to do is come in second place in the primary. Now, people might say, oh, that's difficult, but if you have three Democrats and three Republicans in a race in a district that has a really high decline to state electorate and a Libertarian's running, all they have to do is maybe get 15 or 20% of the vote, because if all the Democrats and Republicans are splitting the vote, and they could walk in to the general election and then be up there on stage and be promoting liberty ideas. So there's some positives and some negatives, but in my opinion, I'm not that big of a fan of it.
Okay. So now why? I mean, what's your main reason for – would you choose the old system if you could?
My main reason why is because, like I said earlier, no longer are you putting Republicans in their own primary, in their own election, so that the people in the Republican Party can finally fix the Republican Party and make the Republican Party a party of liberty and property rights.
But the counter argument to that would be that you would actually, if you're arguing for those things, if we really believe that those kind of liberty politics are common sense politics, that the way to get the support for those ideas is by including in the primary those who aren't partisan Republicans, who are going to be maybe more swayed by the arguments and the common sense in those arguments than, defending the party status quo, which is kind of what we had with the, Ron Paul's, the travesty against Ron Paul and Romney. I mean, that was the thing writ very large. So there is an argument here for, if you want to, as I say, promote liberty within the party, involve people from without the party.
Yeah, and so, my personal opinion is right now, I'm not a big fan of it. However, the old system wasn't working either. Mm. And so I'm somebody who likes to try new things. And, I think it's yet to see how this is going to play out in California. And if it turns out to bring more liberty candidates, then I'll be all in favor of it. But I think we just need to wait and see. It's only been instituted for one election, and we'll see what happens.
And, you talk about bringing in more liberty candidates, and it reminded me that on your campaign website, now let me just give that a plug. That's manualforassembly.com, right?
Yes.
You actually have your motto is the Blue Republican motto, which is principle over party.
I didn't know that was your motto.
How's that playing?
My motto.
How's that playing down there?
Well, I think it plays well. And it's very simple. Look, when I get to the state legislature, if the Democrats have a bill that's going to defend property rights, promote freedom, and promote people being independent and self-sufficient, then I will work with the Democrats to get that bill passed. And if the Republicans have a bill that's going to be destructive of individual property rights, destructive of liberty, hurt the economy, then I'm going to vote against that bill.
Absolutely.
It's not about party. It's about your principles and what you know is right for the state.
Now, Manuel, how long ago did you declare for this race?
Well, I declared in about May of last year, so I've been working for a long time.
Okay, so you now have a good sense of the reception that you're getting and your message is getting. What is your experience?
Well, my experience is very positive. The people that I go out and I talk to, my experience is they're very receptive, but at the same time, I am pushing bold new ideas that most people, quite frankly, don't think about. Mm. And so I want to explain something. I have on my website, under my issues tab, I have what I consider my pledge to the senior citizen. And I'm a big believer in property rights. And I do not believe that our current property tax system encourages property rights. And the question must be asked, if the government has the right to take your home after you, if you don't pay property taxes, even if your home is paid off and you got the title from the bank and you spent the last 20 years paying off your home, if the government can take it because you don't pay your property taxes, who owns that home?
Right. Do you want to see the elimination of property tax in California?
Well, I think eventually that is the goal. If you're running for office and you believe in property rights, then I think that needs to be your goal. But just as, you know, the progressives, as they like to call themselves, I think they're incredibly regressive, but they think they're progressives. They think that property tax is a good thing, which befuddles me, and they're actually trying to raise property taxes in this state. But I think just as they took steps and chipped away at our freedom, we need to take steps and get our freedom back. So I have a plan that I call my Senior Citizen Home Protection Act. And what I want to do is I want to exempt senior citizens from property taxes. I feel like after you've worked your entire life and you've contributed to society, you should feel safe in your home knowing that after that home is paid off and you're retired and you're living on a fixed income and you just want to enjoy time with your family, you shouldn't have to worry that the politician's going to come with the tax man and take your home if you don't pay your yearly stipend. And I think that's the first step towards you know, making people realize that, hey, you know what? Do I really own my home if government can take it? And I want them to ask that question.
I remember when we met, Manuel, in Sacramento last year, and you told me about this plank of your platform, and it struck me, not just because of its principled basis, but one thing that I'm kind of getting about the way you approach politics that if anybody who listens to me regularly will know that I like is you seem to be a pragmatist. You have your principles, but you're not mistaking principles for purism. And you know that, you know, every journey of 10,000 miles starts with a single step. So you kind of have these, as you say, the chipping away at what's wrong to get us a little bit further to what's right. And I like this idea that you, you know, you can't abolish all property tax maybe overnight, but that you can have a swathe of the population who, for many reasons, we might, you know, of economic and social justice, apart from anything else, many people might support being free of property tax for exactly the reasons you say. And then when everybody knows maybe a senior citizen who has, let's say, more full and complete ownership of their property, everyone, you're mainstreaming this idea. You'll be normalizing this idea, right? It won't just be a theoretical thing. It'll be something that's actually going on among some segment of the population. And I think those kind of approaches to politics, to, you know, like moving the dial, you know, to getting people to think of something as a non-extreme position that they might have thought was extreme. And I like that approach.
Yeah, if I was to go out and campaign on, okay, that's it, we're going to end property taxes. You know, that would be a position that I do not think will resonate with the people of California because it is such a huge leap. I want to get there, but if I expect everybody else to get there with me in one giant step, you know, I won't be successful. And so I agree that we do need to take these implemental steps. The first step in a journey of 10,000 steps, like you said, and that's one plank. Another plank that I have is, look, Robin, let me ask you a question, Robin. What is your philosophical stance on the income tax?
this is very complicated, and I could do three shows answering that question.
Okay.
Let me say, I think it's problematic, highly problematic. Let me say that and then hand it back to you. It's a bit of a cop-out.
That I concur with that opinion. You know, there have been books written on the problems with the income tax. I think it's very destructive, not only for free markets, because every dollar that's ever created is taxed, and then every dollar, because we have sales taxes in our state, every dollar that's spent is taxed, and you can never really have a dollar that is reinvested.
All right, you're going to have to hold on to that thought because we're going to another break. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Hold on tight. Welcome back to Blue Republican Radio. This is the very short closing segment, and I don't want to hog it, so I'm going to give it straight back to Manuel and ask him to complete his thought on the income tax.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we were talking about the income tax and how we think it's problematic, and I think it's destructive of free markets, and it's destructive of an individual's ability to provide for themselves and their family. So what I want to do here in the state of California is take an incremental step to get rid of the income tax and allow people to realize the benefits of not having their labor taxed. So I want to exempt people from their state portion of overtime taxes. And this will be good for the economy because right now a lot of business owners cannot find employees that want to work an extra 10, 15 hours a week and be productive for their business, because what's the point? The government bumps you into a higher tax bracket in this regressive taxation system we have, and then they take more money from you because you are working hard to provide for your family. So employers can't find employees to work, and employees don't want to work the extra time. So I want to exempt individuals in the state of California from overtime taxes. If you're working an extra 10 or 15 hours a week, I think that money belongs to you, not to the state. And I think this will be the first step in maximizing your property rights, because your labor produces money and that money belongs to you and it is your property. And it is an incremental step, like many of my other plans are incremental steps, but they're steps in the right way to make sure the people are represented and we can get this economy running. My name is Manuel Martin. I am running for the 9th State Assembly District in California. My website is manuelforassembly.com. If you're in the area, please sign up to volunteer. If you can donate, please donate. Every dollar helps. And thank you for the time today, Robin. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining me. This was Blue Republican Radio for the Liberty Curious. Join me every Monday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. It's always good to have you with me. Thanks very much. See you next
week.
Thank you.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times, WGRR Digital.